One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. If you want to connect with us, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, where I'm probably arguing with robots. Hey, if you are going to be in New York City the weekend of September 11th, September 9th to be specific, Saturday, September 9th, 2023. We're doing a full day presentation that's going to be happening. It's being put on by Billy Ray Valentine, my good friend. I'll be speaking Gardner Goldsmith, John Brisson, Tony Arterburn, Wayne McCroy, Don Jeffries, Richard Gage will all be there. It's an all-day event. The link is in the description, or you can just go to eventbrite.com and search Free World NYC. It'll get you access to the tickets. It's going to be amazing. Saturday, September 9th in New York City. I've never done a 9/11 in New York City, so this will be one for the books. Also, thanks to our sponsors that make the show possible. Chemical Free Body is building the best supplements out there. They actually work. It's amazing. If you are somebody that is looking to improve your health, you're going to be the one to do that. Nobody's going to outsource it for you. You're going to have to take care of that. If you find something that you like over at Chemical Free Body, use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money. Do the detox bundle. That'll clean you out real good. But I take Green 85 every single morning. And I have for the last 3 years since Tim's been aboard with sponsoring the show. So thanks to those guys over there. ChemicalFreeBody.com, promo code MACRO. Also to our partners, Legal Shield. They've been in business for half a century in Canada and the United States. They give you access to high-powered attorneys in your area for a very reasonable price. How reasonable? How's a dollar a day? $30 a month will get you access to a team of attorneys, a law firm in your area that can help you with all kinds of things, contracts, medical directives, financial powers of attorney, get you a last will and testament done. Do you have that? Because if you don't have that and you die, you're going to let the state get involved in your affairs? No, thank you. I'll pass on that. But with Legal Shield, you can knock that out real quick There's also a lot of a la carte items that they have as well. If you run a small business, there's a small business plan. If you're somebody that carries a gun, they have something for that. If you need identity shield, you can take a look at that. I'll tell you what, everything that you need is all in one convenient location over at the website that they built just for us. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to go. Take a look, see what you think, man. You can sort yourself out in a couple minutes and get yourself access to an attorney for a very reasonable amount of money. Take care of all those documents and maybe keep it on the back burner in case you need it. Somebody treats you poorly. Somebody says ruins your shirt at the dry cleaners. You get a letter from your attorney next thing you know. So please promise me you will use this power for good, not evil. Okay. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to be. Well, I'm excited to have Ryder Lees back. You were just here. So, but I didn't know you were working on the coolest movie of all time, man. We would have talked about it back then too. So without further ado, we've got director of the new JFKX Solving the Crime of the Century, Ryder Lee, and his producer, and also I would say star, Jay Widener. Nice to see you guys. How are you all?
Good.
I'm great. Charlie, thanks so much for having me back on, and thanks so much for having me and Jay on. And we're matching, dude. We didn't even plan this, but we're matching.
I know. Well, yeah. You've done it.
You're so out of place.
Well, how dare you, Jay? Get with the pro. We should have sent Jay the memo. Yeah. Listen, this is... Where do we even start with your movie? Okay, because this is an angle on the JFK assassination that nobody has covered this. Nobody has come at it from this direction. I mean, you'd like to think it would happen less than 60 years in, you know, better late than never. I'm so impressed with what you guys have put together with this. It's really fascinating. Ryder, let's start with you. You and I weren't alive for JFK.
Right.
We understand it. We understand the importance of it. We understand 9/11. We understand the importance of that, like sort of our generation's, you know, whatever, you know, JFK, or maybe for some people recently, it's, I don't know, I guess COVID sort of, but there's no one single event like there was for 9/11 or JFK, but this galvanizing event. Everybody knew where they were on the morning of September 11th. Everybody knew where they were on November 22nd, 1963, except for George H.W. Bush, of course. He lost his calendar. But everybody else knew exactly where they were. And it changed us as a society. It changed America. I would say for the worse, too. I'd say there was a very big pivot after that. What was it about JFK that got a hold of you? I mean, you and I, we should be like, oh, that's in the ancient history, man. Let's focus on the new stuff. But you took apart a conspiracy that has been looked at by everybody, and you came at it from a new angle. How in the hell did you do that?
Well, the reason that I think that we wanted to do this is not only is the 60th anniversary of the JFK assassination coming up very soon, and then RFK Jr. running for president in 2024. Jay has had this theory for a really long time, and he's been working on it for a while now. And it's really the original, it's kind of like what you were saying, it's the original conspiracy theory that kind of started all conspiracy theories, right? And it's important for your audience to know that this film that me and Jay Widener made, JFKX, and by the way, I brought him out of retirement, so people should be thanking me. Now I'm just playing, but I did bring him out of retirement, and I'm very grateful for that because he gave me a really amazing chance and a great opportunity. But this film just isn't a rehashing of old information, right? It's new information, and it's unlike anything that you've ever heard before. We take you through all of the theories of what people have speculated happened on November 22nd, 1963, but it's not just another JFK movie, right? Like, how many times can we just rehash the same old stuff, right? We've been told that the CIA has done it since it happened, right? That the mob done it, or the driver of the limo did it, or there was multiple shooters, or it was the Grassy Knoll shooter, right? So this is something brand new, and it is, I think that it is the reason why the government to this day will not release all of the JFK files.
It certainly makes sense. After I watched this, so we're going to have to talk about this movie in a way that doesn't spoil it for the audience. So for those of you out there, you're just going to have to go see it. It's on Amazon Prime. I suggest you go, you can buy it, you can rent it, whatever you want to do, but go take a look and come at it with an open mind, because you're going to see a side of this event that you had never considered before. And it's not snipers and storm drains or anything like that. It's much different. And but Jay, you've been all over this for a long, long time, right? This is nothing new for you. You're the guy who takes films and takes them apart and finds the one piece in that film that is hidden, some obscure, something in the background, and you go, that thing right there means something. And someone goes, holy shit, it does mean something. And then the next thing you know, you're pulling the whole movie apart. Do you feel the same with JFK, this event, that like, once you start to dig in, you just want to pull this entire thing apart because there's so many ways to go with it?
Well, when I started researching it, I found out a lot of stuff that isn't in the movie. Well, I found a lot of disturbing stuff, that's all I can say, that has to do with the Kennedy assassination. But what really, the nexus of, or the birth of the film really comes from the idea that we took that new technology that can take older films and enhance them and remove scratches and all of that. And we just asked ourselves, well, what would happen if we saw the Zapruder film through that same technology and for the first time have a really clear version of the Zapruder film, even clearer than the version that Oliver Stone made for JFK. And then let somebody like me, who has a background in physical effects and film, look at that film and tell you what they see. So that's the approach that we took that I think is far different than anything else. And the way that this all happened was Oliver Stone paid Time Life $80,000 for a really good version of the Zapruder film to put in his movie JFK. But if you watch JFK, he never shows you the whole film. He just shows you little bits. And I'm not going to get into why that is. But it's an odd way of buying a film and then not really showing it. But somebody, and I think it was in Oliver Stone's camp in about 2010 or 11, put up the whole clip, all 27 seconds, for about a month or two on YouTube. And I happened to see it. I was interested in the film, and it was this really pristine version that's not on anymore. And you can't find a pristine version of the Zapruder film except in JFKX. So I saw everything that happened then. And I would show it to people, and because I was curious, and they say, oh my God, really? That's amazing. And I never got anybody like fighting me on it, even conspiracy theorists. And so I knew that there was something there, but then the new good version went away. Then I met Ryder and we were talking, and then the idea of why don't we use this new technology to see the Zapruder film even better than Oliver Stone had it. And then when we did that, it was like, holy smokes. And then, because that confirmed the original assertion, we then back engineered everything else. So I like to say there are theories in the movie and there are speculations in the movie. But what we talk about the Zapruder film is not speculation and it's not theory. We are telling you exactly what is happening in the Zapruder film, and it's on film. And that's why you really can't tell people about it. It just doesn't work. It's film. It has to be on film. You've got to look at it over and over until you finally see the patterns and what is really going on. And what is really going on is as amazing as all the other theories. In fact, it may be more amazing than the other theories. And I also want to just finish this. I personally believe that this film is a very healing film. And I made it that way. I wanted it to be that way. I wanted America to get over this. I wanted America to get this behind us. And the responses that I'm seeing, especially from the non-boomer generations is, wow, what a relief. Now we don't have to talk about this anymore. So that's a relief.
Well, we're a sick nation because we've had a lot of trauma and we've never healed from it. We've never processed it. We've never dealt with it. We've let the Warren Commission deal with it, or the 9/11 Commission deal with it. You tell us how to feel. Tell us how to think. Tell us who to hate. Who did this? Who are we supposed to be mad at? But we've never really, we don't allow ourselves as a nation to do that work of examining it. I mean, as the people in our industry, we dig into it. We want to know what's really going on. A lot of people have outsourced their critical thinking to the establishment or the media or to someone to tell them how to feel or what to think about this. And until we get honest and until we grow up and until we look at what really happened, I don't think we're going to progress from this. So I understand what you're saying when you're talking about how there's healing in this. And also, with regard to what you guys did with, or whoever ran the Zapruder film through, and basically, I don't know, remastered it, for lack of a better term,
right.
It reminded me of when you watch, if you've ever watched like a world, they're hard to find, and there aren't too many of them, but you find like a World War One documentary that's in black and white. And it's kind of clunky, and the people are running, but they don't look like they're really running. Like, there's, you know, it's sped up. It's like it's a little bit faster than normal.
Shooting at 18 frames a second.
Right. And then somebody gets a hold of that and they colorize it, and they do all the mechanics the right way so that the people are running the proper speed, the frame rate's running the right way. And you watch it and you go, oh, this is a whole nother view of this. It's the same footage, but I'm seeing it differently. That's how I felt when I saw this. I've seen this footage 100 times.
Yeah.
But have I?
No, you haven't, because they've all been lousy versions. Even the version that Geraldo Rivera showed in 1974 was just terrible. I mean, it looked like an impression. I'll never forget it. It looked like an impressionistic painting. Like, you thought you had to put glasses on to see it. You couldn't tell what was going on. What I like about our version, though, is there's one part that is really interesting. And that is, if you watch it, and we don't mention this in the movie, but if you watch it, right before the event happens, every person in that limo has their head turned around looking at JFK, except Jackie. She's not paying any attention at all. She's overlooking at the crowd over here. Now, all four people before the event, all four people are at least spending 2 seconds, at least, all looking right at JFK, which is weird if it's an accidental event. So, again, another thing that people don't realize that we really emphasize in this film is that JFK and his brother Bobby Kennedy went after the mob like no tomorrow. Okay. And I don't think they realized how, even though their dad was in the mob, he was in the mob in the late 40s. He had gotten out, become a legitimate businessman. The Kennedys and Joe, I don't think, realized that from about 1951 to 1961, the mob turned into a vicious group of people, and they were compromising, they were killing, and they were getting away with it because there were like suicides and car accidents, and so it was kind of hidden, just like right now the increased death rate is not being talked about, right. And so I think that I think the Kennedys really bravely went up against the mob, the only two people in the history of our country that has actually gone after the mob, but I think that they underestimated who they were going up against.
Well, they might have made the mistake of thinking it was a monolithic entity, being the mob, when in actuality, there's many factions. You've got the Italian mob, you've got the Jewish mob, you've got a variety of them, all angry at Bobby, right? Because he's trying to lock him up, and they're going, you know, we made a deal with your dad. Like, what? Thanks for nothing, guys.
Yeah,
you know,
it should be pointed out that the mob threw the Chicago election for the Kennedys in 1960, and that threw Illinois. And that's how he won. He won because Illinois went. So he got all the votes there. So the mob felt like, hey, we got a president in here. It's going to be our buddy. And it turned out to be just the opposite. Yeah. And we know that John was doing interviews for Attorney General. And Joe walks in the room, and he's got Bobby with him. They're doing the interviews together. And Joe walks in the room and says, you already got your Attorney General. He's here. He's your brother. And John's like, well, no, I don't want to do that. That's nepotism. And Joe insisted on it. So Joe insisted on his bulldog son, Bobby, becoming the Attorney General for John. And I think he probably gave him explicit orders to go after the mob.
Yeah, Bobby was very charismatic. He was probably more charismatic than JFK was, which is really wild. And I really researched RFK for this documentary, and it was amazing the things that I was hearing coming out of RFK's mouth that we show in the documentary JFK X, Solving the Crime of the Century. And everything that he's saying is now being parroted in the conspiracy community.
Yeah.
Full blown, just with different words, right? RFK's talking about that he's uncovered a plot of governmental organized crime, that there's corruption everywhere, and they range from a group of 7 to 12 people. Everything that he was talking about in court while prosecuting these mobsters, right, is what everyone is talking about now. It was unbelievable. I'm like, how do people that research JFK not look into RFK? So that's one of my favorite parts of the movie, is that beginning section on the mob. Because what happened was, is the mob, after the JFK assassination, they kind of, because there was no mention of the mob in the 60s, you know, RFK basically got Joe Valachi to admit that the mob was real.
Even existed. Right? Yeah. There was questions that they were even a real thing.
And then after the assassination,
I never investigated him.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And so after the assassination, the mob kind of disbanded. They didn't really do the things. They didn't really, act like mobsters. They became the corporations now. They got up all in business suits, and they became the head of all of these corporations and these business places, right? Yeah. So they kind of infiltrated their way into what we have now. And RFK and JFK knew that this was the direction that the United States was heading in, and they were trying to stop it. They knew that the mob had control of, and the mob was infiltrated into almost every part of our lives. And they were trying to stop that, and they couldn't, right? Because they, like Jay was mentioning earlier, they didn't realize how deep it actually went and how much control they really had. So that's really one of my favorite parts of this documentary, is just the magnifying glass that we put on the mob and on RFK, which is JFK's brother.
Yeah, it's like there's those quotes talking about coming face to face with a conspiracy that is so massive that they can't believe it. This is a common theme. This is something that John Francis Highland, the mayor of New York City, talked about in 1922. He was talking about this giant octopus with its sprawling tentacles, saying, let me escape from mere generalizations. I'm talking about the Rockefeller Standard Oil interests. And he's talking about how they had infected the courthouse and the media and every component of city life in New York. And you get to the bottom of the three paragraph quote and you go, 1922? That's a century ago. Like, it's the same thing. And it's like, yeah, it's the same thing. Nothing's changed. It's still there. And it feels like the Kennedy brothers came up against this. They probably had an idea there was an organized crime component. Hell, they were dealing with J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI. They're looking at organized crime right there with them. And for them to come to this realization, like, whoa, this is bigger than even we suspected. And we knew it was going to be big, but we didn't know it would be that big. Ultimately, you know, organized crime, FBI, what's the difference really, right, these days?
Well, I mean, they inculcated themselves into our society after the 60s. The Godfather movies being like the beginning of this inculcation by the end of the 1970s, there were hundreds of mob movies out, all glorifying them too, by the way. Even Godfather glorifies the mob. You know, hey, it's just a family. And it started getting out because the mob was worried about the fact that they thought one of theirs had shot Kennedy, and because they didn't know really what happened. And that's when they decided to go legit. And so they bought up casinos. Go watch the movie Casino by Martin Scorsese. They became legit. Godfather, second one, is all about how they became legit. They became a businessman. And so the mob, through really the workings of Meyer Lansky. Meyer Lansky famously had a mob meeting in like 1952 in New York, and all the mob came to it. And then he walked out on stage, and he had a Bolex movie camera on a tripod, and he had a Thompson machine gun. And he said, which one do you clap for? Which one do you think is more powerful? The Bolex? Nobody clapped. The Thompson machine gun? He goes, wrong. Because we're going to put safe houses in every city in this country with two-way mirrors. We're going to put these Bolexes behind every mirror. We're going to bribe every judge, politician, cop. Everybody's going to go to our safe houses, get whatever sex they want. It's where Jerry Epstein got his idea from. And that's what happened. And so they stopped killing people like with hits, and then began killing people more subtly. Yeah. Like, you know, they go out swimming and a frogman pulls them down, that kind of thing. So you never really know what happens. And I had a friend, by the way, who died that way. He was a Clinton. He worked for Clinton, and he was speaking out when Clinton was president. And we kept telling him to shut up. And he went to Hawaii and went out for a swim. And somebody saw frogman out there, and then he died. He washed up on the shore about an hour later.
I'm not really surprised by that, you know. I'm not really surprised. But that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes when you deal with powerful people. That's the way it goes when you deal with the Clintons. I'll tell you another way it goes is whether it's COVID, 9/11, JFK, the media is always driving the getaway car. Yeah. Always. Without the media, none of this works. How come there were no mainstream media affiliates there that day? You guys make a really interesting point about that. How, you know, and I understand that now times have changed and the media is everywhere, but the media should have been everywhere with JFK. He was a rock star, and he's in Dallas.
I was in the media business, but maybe 10, 15 years after that. If the president would come to our town, any president had come to our town, we would have ran down there with cameras and just ridiculous. There was a CBS outlet, an NBC, and an ABC outlet. They had full-scale production facilities in their offices with film processors. And I know the whole story. I know how it all works. Everybody's trained. Even the lowest guy is trained how to use the camera so they can race down whenever there's an emergency. They would have gone. They should have gone up on the triple overpass. I would have shot down. So I got a really good angle of him, you know, no people in front of me. And they should have been all three up there doing that. They could have sold that footage, by the way, over and over and over again. All right. So that footage would have been worth thousands of dollars by the time they finally used it up. So no, they didn't. They were ordered not to go there. It's all like, but they were there. We show in the film, there was a cameraman with a Bolex there filming the people on the ground after the car ran away, drove away. So why wasn't he just turned around and shooting this way? I don't understand.
It defies logic.
It does.
And somehow the
splice.
Yes.
The infamous splice.
Yes, and
go ahead, take it over.
No, I actually have the footage of the splice that I want to show really quick because it's really important. So this is the splice in the Zapruder film.
There you saw it.
Jumps from 207 to 212. There's four frames that are missing in the Zapruder film. And as a filmmaker, Jay being a filmmaker, he can tell you what that means whenever there's a splice in a film, right? It means that there could be anything after that splice. And you can tell that things have been altered in the Zapruder film as well, is because, and many people have pointed this out, is that the people in the background are just as big as the people in the foreground. So whenever Zapruder is going, you know, filming the president in the limousine and Jackie, the people that are in the park are just as big or bigger. Than Jackie, they look like Connelly.
Giants. The perspective is totally off in a way that is noticeable even to me. And I'm not somebody that's a filmmaker. I wouldn't normally really notice, but I didn't notice the color. You know, you talked about the red and the blues and the
color shifting. Yeah, you would need a spectrometer.
Yeah, that I didn't pick up on so easily because I'm not trained to do that. But the size differential of the people in the background that changed, that was like, what happened? Like, what's going on here? It's very obvious that something weird.
Well, also this is very serious evidence that this film, and the Time Life purchased it from Abraham Zapruder, like, within 4 or 5 hours of the assassination. Okay, so they had it all the time. They never told the Warren Commission that there's two splices in the 27-second film. That is, first, it's destruction of evidence.
Yep.
Second, you've got to tell them everything. They aren't filmmakers. They don't know what a splice looks like. And we want to know the name of the technician, and we want to know why, and we want to know what happened to the four frames. How come you didn't keep them and restore it? Why did you cut those four frames out forever to never be seen? Why is it conveniently right when the car disappears behind the Stemmons freeway sign?
Yeah.
You know, that is a coincidence. If you're an investigator, you can't have coincidences. If there's something coincidental that happens, you better just dive right into that area and start looking, because that's where the deceit is. And what they did was they optically altered the Zapruder film after the splice, and they did what is called a traveling mat. So they matted out the background and just isolated the limousine and the occupants. And then they blew the background up and or shrunk the limousine. I think they shrunk the limousine. And they did that to hide certain things that are going on in the limousine as it's passing by. Suddenly, Zapruder can't keep them in the center of the frame. They drift right at the right moment down to the lowest part of the frame. And then as soon as everything happens, it goes back up again. And that's them optically removing the very bottom of the frame so you can't see what's going on. And it's clearly obvious once you see it. My wife doesn't know much about films either, but when she saw that, she's openly gasped, you know, like, I see it. So we show you what really happened in the Zapruder film. We show you a lot of the oddities. When the Kennedys arrive in Fort Worth, they're surrounded by tens of thousands of screaming fans. When they arrive in Dallas, they're surrounded by tens of thousands of screaming fans. Yet when they get to the parade in Dealey Plaza, there's maybe a couple hundred people there, and it's lunchtime on a sunny day. And then when they get past the splice, there's like 8 or 9 people there.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, that is really curious. No cameramen from the news outlets, no people after the splice. It's like, I don't know. It's like just it, really odd.
It makes you ask it. Forces you to ask questions as to why. Why? Why would you? I mean, if it's just the guy who randomly shot this film, you know, and you hand it over, why the edits? And if you refuse to, if you're unable or unwilling to tell me why the edits, then I have to assume it's for some nefarious purpose, right? I mean, we had to clean it up. There was I don't know. If they made up some excuse, then I'd have something to go with. But the fact that they've just pretended that it didn't ever get spliced, I think is very suspicious. Now, what you can draw from that, I don't know. But like, I think what you guys did in the movie, just showing how to do that and the technology behind it. For someone like me, it's extremely helpful because I don't know those tricks. I don't know what to look for. You guys do. And luckily you guys brought that up. And
yeah, no one's brought that up, by the way. I don't think I've ever read, I've seen any documentaries where they talk about the splice.
Well, one of the other things you guys did in this as well, and I'd heard about J.D. Tippit, the cop. I knew the name. You know, it doesn't get a ton of press, but I knew that there was a cop that had been killed. It never really made much sense to me. It would have been one thing if there was like a car chase or something. They were chasing the suspect, but it just was kind of like, well, JFK got shot, and then also this cop got shot pulling somebody over, and you go, okay, what does that have to do with anything? Like, well, what's kind of weird about it is that the cop is a dead ringer for JFK. And you go, wait a second.
Yeah. Oswald killed two people that day. Only two people, J.D. Tippit and John F. Kennedy. And incredible. They are almost the same exact age. They have the same facial type, the same hairline, the same chin, the same eyebrows, the same nose.
What a coincidence.
What an amazing coincidence that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
His nickname was even JFK on the police force as well.
His nickname was JFK. So he was a do-gooder cop, right? That just good-looking guy, happened to look like the president. Is a cop in Dallas the same morning that the actual president is shot in the head. The lookalike cop, the JFK lookalike cop in Dallas, is also shot in the head.
And in the back.
And in the back of the head. Back.
Yeah.
If you look at the autopsy picture of JFK, his head is all blown out, but there's no wounds here on the side of his face, where clearly in the Zapruder film, you see him get shot on the right side of the face. So it's like, wait a minute. And the right side of the face is completely okay in the autopsy pictures. There's no damage at all. So somebody is like seriously lying, and it's right out in front of all of us, and nobody ever talks about it. Nobody ever talks about the incongruities of what happens in the Zapruder film and what happened. Look, there's the side of his face. There's no wound. That's J.D. Tippit.
That is old Tippit. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing about the Warren Commission said that there were three shots that rang out that day, right? And the big theory is that the Grassy Knoll shooter, right? Well, Zapruder is right here, right next to the pergola, right? And that would mean that the Grassy Knoll shooter would have to be right here where my cursor is, right behind the fence, right behind the pergola, which that would mean that the shooter would have shot over the head of Abraham Zapruder, which is shooting the film of the president going through Dealey Plaza. And the footage, he doesn't move or shake or anything. You would think that if there was a bullet that went right past your head and hit the president, you would be jerking. There is no jerking motions. You see the limousine all the way as it gets to the underpass.
Yep.
Right? He's on that limousine all the way to the underpass. Whenever those shots that are fired, people should be ducking. People should be weaving and getting out of the way.
Anybody
but Abraham Zapruder.
Okay, so if there is somebody there behind the Grassy Knoll there, they are about 15 yards away from JFK. Have you ever heard a 30 caliber gun go off?
It's pretty loud.
It's so loud you'll be deaf for a minute after if you're too close to it, and nobody reacts to the bullets splitting through the air. Zapruder doesn't react at all. Nobody hits the ground during the shooting, and this isn't in the film, but I wish it was. After we got done with the film, I was like sitting around thinking, and I went, oh, I wonder why the Warren Commission thought that there were three shots that day. What was their evidence, right? And so I went and looked, and it was apparently a motorcycle cop had left his radio on that day. And so it got recorded in the Dallas police quarters. And they use that as their the evidence for a shooting. So I got that. I found it on the internet, and I listened to it, And I listened to it, and I listened to it, and I didn't hear any shots. And I thought, well, maybe I'm getting old or something, and I can't hear them, right? And so then I did a further look, and the FBI did a forensic analysis of that tape in 1980 with serious acoustic experts and concluded there were no gunshots in that tape.
Wow. Well, that's one of the things that you guys mentioned that I've watched this film many, many times, but I didn't know. I guess I don't have much of a career as an investigator or something, because I didn't notice that nobody flinched from the gunshots. Right. A very normal reaction and an involuntary reaction, whether you want to be a tough guy or not. If a gun goes off, you're gonna shrug your shoulders or turn around or hit the deck or something.
No reaction. Toughest Marine on earth is gonna hit the deck.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they teach you in the military. That's what you learn in drill school.
Nobody moves.
Go straight to the chest and get down as low as you can.
Yeah, but nobody.
And also, why does Jackie, after her husband is shot, why does she get out of the car? You'd think that she would dive down into the car. That's what I would do, but she doesn't. She exposes herself to the whole world when her husband just got shot. It's like, wow, that's pretty weird behavior.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the talk of that would be, well, how do we know how we'd react in a situation like this? You know, everybody does, you know, goes, it looks like she's going to retrieve the something. I mean, everyone thinks she's going to retrieve the back of his head or something. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know. She's crawling across the car as opposed to getting down, get down, get down, get down. She had a very unnatural reaction to it. But again, you can dismiss that because you can say, is a natural reaction to your husband getting his brains blown out and right next to you in the car? And you go, well, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
I agree with that. But it is curious.
It is.
And it's also curious that we show in the movie that John Connolly says that he saw brain matter and blood all over the trunk, when you can clearly see in the Zapruder film that we created zero blood or brain matter on the truck.
Yeah, where's the blood?
There's no blood. It's a black limousine. See it?
Yeah, yeah. That was another thing. There's problems with this, and again, you can hide these problems when you have degraded film, but when you've got HD film, all of those imperfections start to show up, and it's a little bit clearer. It's the different for those of you that haven't watched the movie yet. It's like the difference between, if you're somebody that wears glasses and doesn't wear glasses, it's like the difference between watching something on TV without your glasses on and then someone saying, no, here, now watch it with your glasses. And you watch it and you go, oh, now I can see clearer. It's a different story. It's just enough difference that it makes you kind of go, what?
Yeah, that's kind of why I keep bringing up the impressionistic painting. Because I always think that impressionistic paintings were paintings for people who, you know, that's what the world looks like with your glasses off, right?
Yeah.
And so the Zapruder film always had that impressionistic, where you couldn't really tell what was going on. People thought the driver did turn around and shoot Kennedy. There's even theories that Jackie shot Kennedy. But once you see the clear version, you don't see anything like that.
Yeah. There are missing items from the National Archives. What are they? What was missing and why are they missing?
The brain, JFK's brain.
And tissue matter. Yeah.
And the tissue matter. Yeah. It's gone. And we don't know what happened to it. So
was it ever there or was it?
It probably was there, but they wanted to make sure that, there were serious problems with, you know, the autopsy. And so they were trying to do everything they could to obfuscate what happened during the autopsy.
And what happened with the autopsy was that they put some seriously inexperienced doctors in a position to perform this autopsy. Again, each one of these little bits is not the smoking gun itself, but it's just another piece of evidence that you have to throw on the pile. And you go, listen, I'm not saying that the autopsy tells me one way or another, but you have to admit it is inconsistent with reality that you've just had the president of the United States shot. You're going to have somebody come in and do an autopsy on the president, and you're going to pick people that don't do autopsies? Why? Why?
Yeah, here's another shot of the autopsy photo of JFK that I didn't get to show earlier. Do you see it on your screen?
Yep.
Yeah, the shot to the back of the head. And yeah, there was a lot of arguments between the Dallas police and the FBI and the Secret Service during the autopsy. It was like a back and forth argument between them of who was going to autopsy the JFK's body. And ultimately, it got decided that that they were going to take it to Bethesda Naval Hospital for the autopsy by these doctors that don't know what they're doing during autopsies. Right. And there was people in there that was telling them to stop doing certain procedures and certain, examinations on JFK as well, like admirals and generals and stuff. So it's a really weird scene there. It was kind of just his body was just kind of whisked away, like to Air Force One, and then taken directly to Bethesda Naval Hospital, which, like you're saying, it's another piece of the puzzle there and something that needs to be examined for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that nobody ever looks at these pictures and asks themselves, wait a minute, there's so many incongruities here. What's going on? And I really believe that our explanation is the most succinct explanation for all the different disparities that are going on in the case. And I think that in the end, this theory is going to be the prevalent one. It may take 3 or 4 years for it to become on the common ground, but I believe it will be the prevalent theory.
People have got to give this consideration. They've got to take a look at it and add it to their. You've heard all the crazy speculation about it. Here's a new line of thinking backed up with some improvements in technology that didn't exist back then. And I think it's reasonable for us to rehash this. I know a lot of people think, well, this is ancient history. What does it matter? Well, it matters because if they can get away with this, they can get away with anything. And we all know that. And it, of course, that has been, I think, proven to us over the last 60 years that there's, if somebody could pull off a hoax of this magnitude, or a murder of this magnitude, or an assassination of this anything that is this prominent that everybody in the world is taking a look at, if you can throw that in front of people's eyes and still get away with it, it just makes you probably feel invincible. I wonder. What happened with the Warren Commission when they got involved in this? Because we know in our lifetime, the 9/11 Commission, hell, they tried to put Henry Kissinger in charge of that. We know what they do with those sorts of things. It's a cover-up squad. You know, they're set to create a bunch of limited hangouts or maybe get you going down one path and prevent you from going down another. What was the role in this? I didn't do too much research into the Warren Commission, but I assume that it wasn't as, you know, I'm assuming it was the cover-up squad again, but what did you guys find about them?
Well, I mean, Alan Dulles is on the Warren Commission. Kennedy fired Alan Dulles for the Bay of Pigs. I mean, you got to be kidding me, right? You're putting Kennedy's biggest enemy on the Warren Commission, real. And then there's Gerald Ford, and he's J. Edgar Hoover's front man. And relating everything back to the FBI from every meeting. And the Warren Commission, though, you know, just like the conspiracy theorists, they got to kind of be forgiven because they didn't understand what they were looking at. If you don't know what you're looking at, you're not going to be able to interpret it in the right way. And so I'm not saying that I like the Warren Commission. I don't. But I'm sure that when they looked at the Zapruder film, probably a crappy copy of it, they went, oh, okay, what's going on here? Well, he's grabbing his neck. Is he grabbing his neck? I don't know what he's doing with that hand on the neck. So they assumed that must have been a neck shot. And the conspiracy theorists thought the same thing, only it was coming from the other way. And then, of course, the head shot. And then they're not knowing what's really going on or anything about Hollywood. It's just probably shocking to them. And then the most important thing about the Warren Commission, though, is they did the Dallas police did paraffin tests on Oswald that day on November 22nd, they did his arm, they did his neck and his cheek, this side, where you hold the gun. Now, the gun blast backwards puts gunpowder everywhere back here. The paraffin picks it up. You put it through a spectrometer, and you know that he fired a rifle. He did not fire a rifle that day, period.
Boom.
You know it. It was within 3 hours they did the paraffin test. Could not have drifted off or gone away. So, no, he didn't. Then the Warren Commission knew it. They knew he didn't fire a rifle, but they still went ahead with everything.
So you're a guy, you do the test on Oswald, you go, he's not the shooter. He doesn't have any of the he doesn't have any of the blowback. He can't be our guy. You love your country, you love your president. Your president just got shot. Nobody goes rogue. Nobody says, Oswald's not our guy. I don't care what you guys do. I don't care what you say. I'm not looking at him anymore. I'm looking for different suspects. Did that happen at all? Did anybody stand up to this, or was it just massive group?
I remember the greatest beneficiary of the JFK incident is Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Oh.
Okay. He made sure that it happened in Dallas where he could control the ground there. He got his oath of office before he took off so that he could control the ground when he landed. Right. So he was in complete control of D.C. and all of Texas. I mean, he ran Texas like a mobster runs a place.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that all this is true because one of his best friends, I forget his name now, one of his best friends' fingerprint is on one of the boxes on the sixth floor depository, right where the gun was hidden. So it was Johnson's guy that hid the gun. Right. So I'll go up the sixth depository and throw a gun in a box and hide it. And the guy accidentally left a fingerprint, right? And so Johnson is the one manipulating everything on the ground. So he's telling Dallas police, he's probably the one that gave him the bulletin, identifying a man with a 30 caliber rifle, which Oswald didn't have. He'd stashed it. So, and also we know we played the recording of the discussion of the hit on Kennedy 6 or 7 weeks before Dallas, in which they say they're going to get a guy with a high-powered rifle in an office building to shoot him.
But the most surprising thing about that recording, sorry, Jay, the most surprising thing about that recording is that they say the undercover agent that's recording the conversation between this hitman, and he says that they will pick somebody up moments after the assassination, right? To swayed public opinion, which is exactly what happened. That's exactly what they did. How important that audio recording is unbelievable, right? And the thing about Oswald is Oswald was never charged for the murder of the president of the United States. He was charged for the murder of J.D. Tippit, right? The public put on him and dropped those, made it seem like that he also killed the president of the United States, JFK, right?
He was
never charged for that.
When you see those sessions where Oswald is detained and he's surrounded by a bunch of people, but the press are asking him questions and he's able to sort of interact with them.
That is totally illegal. You can't do that.
He
can't do that with a prisoner.
Well,
bring him out. They bring him out to the press. He have him do a press conference. You can't do that.
No, he seems genuinely shocked, though, when they're talking about the president party. He's just kind of like, what? He's like, I don't know anything about that. They're just saying that I shot a man, a cop. And he looks confused. Then, of course, you know, you go, oh, Jack Ruby. Oh, Jack Ruby is just a concerned citizen. Jack, you mean Jack Rubenstein? Did mafia guy? Are we not going to talk about the fact that the guy that shot him is a mafia guy? I mean, come on, what's going on? So, I mean, there's a lot more to this story that people just either are unwilling or unable to understand.
Then there's the whole problem around, which we don't brush on too much in the movie, but it's always been bothered me is, you know, Oswald was a Marine, so he was, you know, a guy who had, you know, probably frosty eyes. And the two cops that are surrounding Oswald during the Ruby shooting are, you know, veteran policemen, yet nobody sees Ruby running up to him with a gun. They're just like staring ahead like they don't see him. I mean, come on. He's like 4 feet away. You'd look over there. What are you doing with a gun? You know, and they don't do anything. Oswald doesn't even see Ruby. He never looks over at Ruby's approaching. It's weird.
And the shot that we also show in the film, that is a little well-known shot that really no one ever talks about, is another shot of Ruby shooting Oswald, where there's a convenient microphone that's placed up in the right-hand corner of the shot.
Yeah.
Who put that microphone there?
That's a weird place for a microphone.
You would only put a high-quality Hollywood microphone up in the ceiling if something significant was going to happen below it. And Oswald was just walking through the parking lot on his way to the courtroom. Nothing significant was to happen there at all. So that did Ruby get there early and put the mic up there? How did he know that that was going to be the spot where it was going to happen? There's like so many questions.
Did we ever get any autopsy photos of Oswald or no? Nope.
No autopsy of Tippett or Oswald.
Interesting.
The only two autopsies I've ever seen with dope photos.
Well, maybe they were just, you know, maybe the Oswald guy performing
it was boring. There's a sketch.
A sketch Oswald artist. There's a sketch artist in the corner that was drawing the autopsy. I mean, you kind of have to laugh because it's really preposterous. There's a lot of real big flaws with this story. And I think that anytime you're talking about, you know, an event of this magnitude, something that's transformational for the entire country, whether it's 9/11 or JFK, you're going to make mistakes, especially on an operation this size, this massive. You can't control everything. They did a pretty good job, I think, of controlling the crime scene, the media, the flow of information, you know, whatever they could, but you can't control it all. And when you give a bunch of, lunatics like us 60 years to go dig into it, you know, you're there. If you've made a mistake, somebody's going to find it. It and what's crazy is that it's I think it might be you two. You guys found it.
Yeah, and I think the four missing frames are part of the mistakes that were made. I think they had it planned. When I look at the triangulation of where Zapruder is standing, right? I think they had it planned that when it goes behind the Stemmons Freeway sign, that was when they were going to do their major action, so that when it comes out the other end, that action is completed. But it's not completed. It's still in. He's still in the process of doing the things that he has to do to get everything to work. I'm talking about Kennedy. And I think the four frames, I think you see him do something before he enters behind the freeway. So
it necessitates the clipping of and the editing of frames. Had they done it the way they had intended it, he would have been blocked by a big sign. And what you're saying is that he was off by a second or two, and then as a result, they had to clip the footage to remove that.
So four frames is almost a quarter of a second. In 8mm film, it runs 18 frames a second. So a quarter of a second doesn't seem like very long, but actually that's a long time to cut out. So something got cut out, and I think that's what it was. I think Kennedy did not coordinate it quite right. There was a miscoordination, and actually I'm grateful for it, because that's how I saw what was going on, because of Kennedy's mistake.
Well, Jay, you're out of retirement now.
I am.
You know how that goes. People come out of retirement, they get right back up into their old tricks. Are you you back up to your old tricks? You got anything else cooking on the horizon?
Oh yeah, Ryder and I are making a trilogy. This is the first of three, and it's each one is going to be more mind blowing than the one before. And I like to say that we're twisting reality back to normal. I believe that's what we did in JFKX. I think we everybody had this set of reality. Then we came in, showed you the good version, twisted that reality, but in a way that makes you feel like better than you did with the other conspiracy theories of the president getting shot in the head in time in the town square, or nefarious forces everywhere. This explanation makes sense.
Yeah.
And it has motive, and everything. So I think that the next two films that we're going to be doing are going to do that same cathartic type of thing.
Well, we need it as a nation. We need it. We need to process this, take the lessons that we can out of it and move on and make sure that we're never in a situation where something like this is happening again. Ryder, what else have you got going on? How's Raised by Giants doing?
Doing great, my friend. I'm doing a UFO cult series right now, which is another thing that really needs to be done within this community, this UFO community on my channel. But there's one other thing that I wanted to mention really quick before we end up here is on March 14th, 1967, right? JFK's body was removed from his grave at Arlington Cemetery, right? Yeah. And it was moved to another location. And no explanation or reason was ever given for this. And they did it in the middle of the night. And we show it in this film. We show you the pictures of them in the middle of the night, removing JFK's body, right? Whoa. And not telling anyone, which I think is very odd as well. And another really strange thing is that it's not well known that JFK was also suffering from Addison's disease, which for those that are not, don't know, is an autoimmune disorder that causes constant pain. And JFK had to wear a back and neck brace a lot of the time, mostly in private. But there's a few pictures of him in public, which we show also in the documentary. And you know, we have a real issue and a real problem within the community. And I've mentioned this on several people's shows as, you know, we're doing the rounds promoting our film JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century, is that people always say, they're always saying all the time in this community and even outside of the community sometimes, is they're like, we want the truth, right? Give us the truth. Tell us the truth. Tell us what's really going on here, right? But that's not really what they want, right? They want to hear their own preconceived thoughts, ideas, theories, and beliefs regurgitated directly back to them, right? And unfortunately, we are the ones that create a lot of these conspiracy theories, right? Because the lack of transparency from our leaders, but our leaders know exactly what's going on. Right. They know what's going on. And a lot of these theories are distractions from really what happened. Right. I just made a post on Facebook earlier that what people think is the cover story is the actual cover. Right. The cover is the cover. And what's really going on is brushed underneath the rug for no one to ever figure out and for anyone to actually even solve. And in this film, JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century, right, that's on Amazon Prime, again, it's not just another JFK film, right? It's like Jay was saying earlier, it's a healing film. And from that trauma that was induced on the world almost 60 years ago, and it's unlike anything that you've ever heard before, and it explains everything that we've said here today on this show and much more, and you really just need to watch it to fully grasp and understand what we're trying to portray to you.
I watched it. I'm telling you right now, you people need to go out there and watch it. You can buy it. You can rent it. It's on Amazon. It's on Amazon Prime. You just go to Amazon.com and type in JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century, and take a look for yourself. I'm telling you right now, you will not be disappointed. That's Jay Widener and Ryder Lee. You can support their work. I'm going to put the links to everything in the show notes so you don't have to dig around. But if you want to just go to Amazon, it's easy to find. And if you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.